Partly cloudy nights in the mid-60s.
Welcome to another edition of Hey Doc. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center, right here in Jacksonville, Florida. I'm your host for the next half hour. With me today is my co-host and wife, Carmen Lasky, a certified EMT. Together, we hope that you will find the show informative, educational, as well as entertaining.
I would be better off not starting this radio show with the word statistics, because that might make our listeners, like you, assume a very boring show and change stations. But take heart. These statistics are not only important to know about, but they also pertain to one of the hottest topics in the news today. By that I mean the dilemma now that there has been a pause in the distribution of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. But first, a bit of background.
The U.S. Food and Drug Administration authorized the single-shot Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine in late February of this year. By the time the pause took effect, more than 7 million in the United States received the J&J vaccine.
However, on April 13th of this year, the FDA and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention announced that 6 women between the ages of 18 and 48 had a serious reaction, likely tied to the J&J vaccine and involving blood clots in a vital area of the brain. So statistically or mathematically, whichever way you want to call it, that is a 45-day period, or about 1/8 of a year. 6 people were found to have suffered this serious reaction, which happens to be a blood clot. Now, extrapolating that number gives us a probable number of around 42 suffering this side effect yearly if we continue vaccinating using the J&J vaccine at the same rate of about 4 million doses a month. And that's assuming that these vaccines are found to be the cause of the blood clots.
For those of you who might be unfamiliar with the term extrapolate, it simply means extend the application of statistics to an unknown situation by assuming that existing trends will continue.
Anyway, so we have come up with one statistic, that being that the rate of morbidity related to blood clots from the J&J vaccination is 1 in 1.2 million vaccinations, or less than 0.00001% of the entire population that got the vaccine. Now remember, the chance of getting hit by lightning in a lifetime, that's a lifetime, is 1 in 13,000. And in any given year, 1 in 650,000.
Also remember that every year, the influenza infection can affect people differently. But millions of people get flu every year. Hundreds of thousands of people are hospitalized, and thousands to tens of thousands of people die from flu-related causes every year.
So as not to bore you, wrap your brain around this one.
The risk of dying from COVID-19 is anywhere from 36 to 78 times higher than the risk of dying from a J&J vaccine-related blood clot.
So, if and whenever the J&J vaccination gets approved to continue being used across the country, take heart. Remember that the risk of taking the vaccine, even if it has been shown to continue in its 1 in 7 million deaths and 1 in 1.2 million non-lethal clots, it is still way, way, way less than the chance of dying from COVID-19. I think that should be enough on that subject. Have you ever heard of the kissing disease? Now, when I went to medical school those long years ago, mononucleosis, which was commonly called mono, often attacked teenagers and young adults. It still does, and has been nicknamed the kissing disease. Now, it's spread through contact with an infected individual's saliva.
For example, individuals can get it by sharing a drink with an infected patient, even if they are asymptomatic.
Although mono can be a horrible experience, it does not usually lead to severe complications. So after a few weeks of rest, the patient usually gets better and can return to normal activities. However, a small percentage of cases can lead to further health issues, some of which are quite severe.
But this is not the kissing disease that we want to talk about today. No, we are talking about something called Chagas disease, or the kissing bug disease.
It was an illness of Latin America and pretty rare for us to see here in the United States. In fact, it was is likely that we would either never see a case of it or maybe once in a lifetime. But recent statistics tell us that more than 1 in 10 Latin American-born immigrants from Chagas endemic countries have this infection. In fact, about 1 in 20 from several areas such as El Salvador, Oaxaca, Mexico, can carry this disease.
Right now, there are an estimated 300,000 cases in the United States, with an estimated 63 to 315 newborns born with congenital Chagas each year, some of whom demonstrate enlarged livers and spleens, jaundice, fever, lethargy, low platelets, and anemia, among other symptoms.
Trypanosomes are a type of parasites that can infect humans. African sleeping sickness is caused by one type of trypanosome, while Trypanosoma cruzi causes the disease known as American trypanosomiasis or Chagas disease. There are likely around 8 million people through Central and South America, including Mexico, who have this disease.
Most of these people do not even know that they are infected with the parasite. If the disease is not treated, the infection can last throughout life and can become life-threatening.
Being bitten by an insect that is infected with the parasite is the main cause of the disease.
But there are other causes or factors involved in developing Chagas disease. Of course, as we said, insects are the main vector, and that is where the disease gets its nickname, the kissing bug disease.
A human becomes infected with Chagas disease when one of the bugs deposits their feces on the human skin. The feces contain the parasite, and once the feces is on the skin, the parasites will enter the human host through the bites or through any break in the skin. As a matter of fact, the parasites may also enter the human through the mucous membranes located in the mouth and the nose.
The reason that the bugs that spread this disease are often referred to as kissing bugs is that the rash that is caused by Chagas disease looks similar to what the skin looks like after prolonged kissing.
Unfortunately, in some cases, the parasites will eventually enter the bloodstream. Now, this can become quite dangerous as they'll take over organs and cause a lot of damage. In addition to living in primitive or poor housing, if a person lives in a home that borders or possibly invades an area where trypanosomine bugs reside, then he or she is more at risk for developing this disease.
The bugs can enter the human world and often will infect their domesticated animals, such as dogs and cats.
Although this disease is generally not considered to be contagious from human to human, there have been reports of the Chagas disease being spread to humans through organ transplants, from blood transfusions, and from a mother to an infant through the placenta.
What we have not mentioned yet is that the parasite may also be inhaled or ingested, and a human may come in contact with a parasite through a laboratory accident.
Bed bugs can infect or reinfect mice, which can start the human vector. You might be asking if we can get it passed through any foods, and the answer is yes. The fruit and some of the other produce that comes from these areas could cause you to become ill. So it's always a good idea to wash whatever food you are going to eat in order to prevent any foods contaminated with the feces of an infected bug. That most likely is not the best song clip to put with a discussion of Chagas disease. After all, Boris the Spider, sung by the group known as The Who and written by their bassist, John Entwistle, is obviously about a spider, which is an arachnid and not strictly an insect. But I was hard put to find a song clip concentrating on this reducivid bug.
Luckily, there are various rapid diagnostic tests for Chagas disease which are available, but your physician would have to order these tests upon suspicion of Chagas disease.
And not many doctors are familiar with it, at least in real life and not just medical books. The one thing that we all want to know is, what is the treatment? And secondly, how successful is that treatment?
To treat Chagas disease, the physician must use antiparasitic drug to eliminate T. cruzi from the body, and must also treat the symptoms of the disease to address the effects of the infection.
The two antiparasitic medications are benznidazole and nifurtimox. Now, either drug is usually successful and must be given 2 to 3 times a day orally for around 2 to 3 months. Not days, months. Taking the medication as prescribed will eliminate the parasite from 50 to 80% of people in the acute phase, but only 20 to 60% of those in the chronic phase. So it's a really good idea to catch the disease early.
Treatment of chronic disease is more effective in children than in adults, and the cure rate for congenital disease approaches 100% if it's treated in the first year of life.
Unfortunately, elimination of T. cruzi does not cure the cardiac and gastrointestinal damage already caused by chronic Chagas disease, so these conditions must be treated separately.
Benznidazole is usually considered the first-line treatment because it has milder adverse effects than nifurtimox, and its efficacy is better understood.
Well enough for this buggy disease. Back to the Johnson & Johnson vaccine and its problems related to blood clots.
This is a great time to tell you about Southside Medical Center. Hello, I'm Dr. Harold Lasky. I have been the medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center for the past 34 years. We're located at 3604 Southside Boulevard, just two blocks south of the Beach Boulevard intersection between the Tulsa Welding School and the old Pottsburg Post Office.
We will treat your pains, sprains, and strains.
We are proud to welcome to Southside Medical Center Dr. Susan Pollan, MD, a board-certified pain specialist.
Our practice emphasizes chronic pain management as well as anti-aging medicine. We also have an office-based substance treatment program for those who need it. Southside Medical Center is open 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. If you would like to make an appointment or ask any questions about Southside Medical Center, please call us at 641-4411. That's 641-4411. Southside Medical Center, where your health is our primary care.
Welcome back to the Hey Doc Show.
Well, let's get back to the Johnson & Johnson vaccine and its problems related to blood clots. In this case, we're not talking about ordinary blood clots, where an anticoagulant like heparin, is also called a blood thinner, can be used to treat the problem. The disorder is called CVST, or cerebral venous sinus thrombosis, and it relates to a structure in the brain called the cavernous sinus.
This is a very interesting anatomic location for a number of reasons. Think of the cavernous sinus as a major crossroads inside the brain. If a blood clot forms, there can be very serious neurologic consequences.
It's the only area in the entire human body where an artery passes right through a venous structure. It's also traversed by several nerves, including the oculomotor nerve, the trochlear nerve, and the ophthalmic as well as maxillary branches of the trigeminal nerve. There's also another nerve that's related to this, and that's called abducens nerve. The FDA and CDC announced a pause in administering the J&J COVID-19 vaccine while they research the cases.
Many are curious now in how the J&J vaccine differs from the Moderna and Pfizer, as both of these are based on a protein from the mRNA molecule. Vaccine technology known as mRNA.
These vaccines contain the genetic code of a COVID-19 virus protein, but the code is in mRNA molecules instead of a viral vector. The J&J vaccine, on the other hand, is a viral vector vaccine. It delivers what they say is a harmless version of a different virus containing a genetic code that makes a part of it the COVID-19 virus protein.
You could say that when this is injected into your arm, the vaccine teaches your body to recognize and fight the virus if you are exposed to it later on.
There's another vaccine using the same approach, and that's the one manufactured by AstraZeneca, which has been in use in other countries, and it uses a similar vector approach. It happens that AstraZeneca vaccine is also linked to similar cases of blood clots, primarily in women under 60. Now, several experts believe that the clots are a reaction to this particular form of vaccine.
All of these vaccines that we have mentioned do still contain the genetic code of a COVID-19 virus protein, but in the case of the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines, the code is in mRNA molecule instead of a viral vector.
Your body then makes the protein, and just like with the viral vector, this triggers an immune response that protects you from getting COVID. Now, all vaccines help the body create cells with what we'll call memory of how to fight a particular virus in the future. And none of the vaccines in the U.S. can give you COVID-19. None.
Remember that we said that around 5 people in a million develop CVSD each year, not related to the vaccine.
It is this rare form of stroke that occurs when a blood clot prevents blood from draining out of the brain. The blood cells can rupture, leaving blood in the brain tissue. Platelet cells, as you may know from several of our previous shows, are instrumental in helping blood clots when we cut ourselves or have an injury that bleeds. But even with a low platelet count, clotting can still occur.
In the case of the AstraZeneca vaccine, researchers identified a protein known as a platelet factor 4 or PF4 antibody in the patients who developed CVSD and thrombocytopenia.
The antibody was already known to cause an autoimmune clotting disorder in some people who were given the blood thinner heparin and developed a CVST. But the symptoms can also incur in people who are not given heparin. The researchers suspect the PF4 antibody is linked to CVST and low platelet counts in the vaccine recipients.
For most clots, the treatment is heparin. In fact, it is the standard treatment for blood clots since it helps thin the blood and prevent new clots.
But giving heparin is very dangerous and could be fatal when administered to patients with CVST combined with low platelet count. So here's where the CVST form of blood clots are of concern. That is a patient who received the J&J vaccine and showed CVST or other blood clot symptoms. Then the physician should administer blood thinners other than heparin, as well as intravenous immune globulin.
The main symptoms of CVST are severe headache, abdominal and leg pain, as well as shortness of breath.
You know, with virtually any medical treatment, there's some degree of risk of side effect. When the polio vaccine was introduced in the 1950s, saving countless children's lives, there were manufacturing complications that led to children contracting polio from the vaccine. The vaccination drive was paused. The problems were cleared up, and the vaccine program continued, and polio was virtually eradicated from the United States as of 1979. Now, we must consider that here. Time and time again, we've talked about herd immunity. This includes immunity due to masses of people having gotten the immunity from having the actual disease, as well as the number who would obtain immunity from a vaccine.
The COVID-19 pandemic can be ended if enough people get vaccinated, protecting your health and the health of your family and community.
Well, another musical interlude. I know that you all know this one, so no question on it. Next time you make a salad, you might want to consider adding mushrooms to it. That's because higher mushroom consumption is associated with a lower risk of cancer, according to a new Penn State study published on March 16th in Advances in Nutrition. Now here comes that mushroom song. Well, maybe we're getting a little too silly here, so back to some serious talk. A systematic review and meta-analysis examined 17 cancer studies with data from more than 19,500 cancer patients. The scientists wanted to see if there is any relationship between mushroom consumption and cancer risk.
Mushrooms happen to be rich in vitamins, nutrients, and antioxidants. The team's findings show that these superfoods may also help guard against cancer.
Even though shiitake, oyster, maitake, and king oyster mushrooms have higher amounts of the amino acid ergothionine than white button, cremini, and portobello mushrooms, the researchers found that people who incorporated any variety of mushrooms into their daily diets had a lower risk of cancer. And according to the findings, individuals who ate 18 grams of mushrooms daily had a 45% lower risk of cancer compared to those who did not eat mushroom.
Mushrooms are the highest dietary source of ergothionine, which is a unique and potent antioxidant and cellular protector.
Remember that replenishing antioxidants in the body may help protect against oxidative stress and lower the risk of cancer.
When specific cancers were examined, the researchers noted the strongest association for breast cancer, as individuals who regularly ate mushrooms had a significantly lower risk of breast cancer.
Now for something a bit different, and it concerns music. Music theory, music note frequencies, and medicine. there has been an ongoing dilemma and sometimes outright war among musicians and to some degree scientists concerning what frequency should the A note be set at. Should it be 432 vibrations per second or 440 vibrations per second or even some other vibrations per second?
You might think all this is crazy, but ever since the 18th century, the note called A4, that is the A above middle C, has been the measurement and tuning standard for all Western music.
Depending on what part of the world the orchestra is from, however, A4 could range from anywhere between 400 hertz and 480 hertz. And remember, hertz is the term for vibrations per second. Now, this isn't universally accepted over all orchestras. For an example, the New York Philharmonic uses 442 hertz. The Boston Symphony Orchestra uses 441 hertz, and many symphonies in parts of Europe use 443 or 444 hertz.
It might not sound so trite when you realize that famous composers like Mozart, Bach, and Beethoven all tuned their orchestras to a different pitch.
If you Google 432 hertz, you'll find a tremendous number of articles and YouTube videos about the tuning of the A note to equal 432 hertz and its presumed healing and its soothing properties. Presumably, the 432 hertz tuning is in some way tuned to the vibrations of nature itself, whereas the 440 hertz tuning was supposedly suggested by Joseph Goebbels, the Nazi minister of propaganda.
Yes, that's right. There are millions of people in the world who believe that Goebbels introduced the tuning to make people feel more anxious.
Now, why should 432 hertz be so great? And what do I mean by being in tune to nature? It's because of a phenomenon in nature called the Schumann resonance. You see, lightning resonates in the area between the Earth and the ionosphere in peaks with a strong fundamental at 8 hertz. Now, whenever you multiply any frequency by 2, you get what's called in music an octave. So the first C is 8 hertz, then doubled, the second C is 16 hertz, and so on up the scale until you get to the note A after middle C, which is 432 hertz. Now, this is the note that some called La in the Do-Re-Mi scale.
According to proponents of the theory, the number 432 has special properties, and indeed, it is an interesting number. It is a sum of four consecutive primes, 103 plus 107 plus 109 plus 113.
It's also exactly 3 gross, where gross is 144, and that's a traditional unit. An equilateral triangle whose area and perimeter are equal has the area of exactly the square root of 432. So what you will hear in just a moment are the two variants. One variant bases itself on the A note being set to 440 vibrations per second, and the other to 432 vibrations per second. However, I'm not going to tell you which is which. You're now going to hear sample one. It may be the 440 hertz sample or the 432 sample. Or the next one. If you're interested and you'd like to know which one is which, leave me an email at livelonger@gmail.com and tell me also which one you liked better and which one, again, you think might be a little off kilter. Or maybe you liked both or hated both. Doesn't matter. Send me an email, livelonger@gmail.com.
If you are really interested in what we are talking about, just go to the internet and search for the 440 and 432 controversy.
There are also experiments in sound using different frequencies where scientists think that they can cure cancer or kill microorganisms just by using the natural frequency of each of these to our advantage. And that is what we are going to start next week's show. Can we kill microorganisms or even cure cancer using just sound or electromagnetic frequencies?
I'd like you, our listeners, to know that I am one of several physicians right here in the Jacksonville area that has received the certification to recommend medical marijuana to those patients with certain qualifying diagnoses. For more information, you can call our office at 641-4411.
We have also set up a special website at CompassionateCareJax.com, where you can get a whole lot more information on medical marijuana.
We've come to the end of another Hey Doc show.
So, from all of us here at Southside Medical Center, have a happy and healthy weekend. Goodbye.